Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And just to show you how normal things are getting in terms of weather around here, the fact that your schools are closed again is not even the crazy martini today, Jim, despite the brief dusting of snow this morning.
Yeah, it doesn't cover the grass. I don't think we had a plow come through our neighborhood, and there's been no accumulation on the roads. I realize listeners are kind of tired of me complaining about this, but I can't help but I have this suspicion, Greg, that the Fairfax County Public Schools administrators listen to the podcast and say, let's get Garrity. Let's mess up his day. Ah, look, I see it's a cloud. Quick, close school. Because here's the thing. The forecast was there might be freezing rain. There might be some accumulation during the morning rush hour. If you want to wimp out and say, you know, delayed opening, fine. All right. I realize you're gun shy after last week. But there's like nothing. And school's totally canceled. Totally canceled. And tomorrow's up in the air. Because, you know, there's snow in patches on the lawn. And so I'm just going to rant about this for like days and days and days. And I think when the GDP drops in the winter months, this is why, Greg. School administrators are destroying America's economy.
It's this amazing phenomenon called winter. Apparently they'll adjust to it at some point. At least I hope they will. All right, on to the good martini today. And it's an interesting kind of general good martini, and that's that the 2016 Republican field is starting to take shape. Some of you may be saying, it's not even the middle of January quite yet of 2015. Leave us alone for a few more months. But the good news is, Jim, we're almost, about a week from now, we'll be exactly 2 years away from the nightmare ending, that is the 8 years of the Obama presidency, and there will be a new president. Hopefully it will not be a Democrat this time. And we're starting to see who's in. It'll likely be a fairly large field. In the past few days, we've certainly seen moves by Mitt Romney and Chris Christie's State of the State address. New Jersey was almost entirely a foreshadowing of a presidential run. He's starting his own PAC. It looks like John Thune is saying no. Rand Paul is likely to get in, which is surprising to no one. Paul Ryan said no. He's going to stay on as a House Ways and Means Committee Chairman. So we're getting closer to the end of the Obama presidency, and we're starting to winnow the field a little bit. So it is an exciting time.
You and I had talked about the idea of setting up a NCAA tournament bracket-style organization for the Republican presidential field.
Yes.
And it seems, you know, like the good news is we might be slightly less than 64 potential candidates right now. I think it's a really good news and our good martini that John Thune and Paul Ryan are not running for president, not because we don't like them, not because they wouldn't potentially make good presidents, but mostly because the system of American governance has a lot of important jobs beyond the presidency. And I don't think it does Republicans much good to have all of their top tier talent smashing into each other and tearing each other down in an attempt to only be the one guy on top. We're going to need good cabinet officials in the next Republican administration. We need good Republican senators. We need good Republicans in the House of Representatives. We need good, you know, committee chairmen. There's a little bit of ego in having everybody in the party run for president. So I got to salute Paul Ryan. I got to salute John Thune for doing that and for avoiding this. You know, my one of my posts on Campaign Spot today is raising the question of whether we need, and I'm only kind of tongue in cheek when I say this, an all rookie presidential debate this year. Maybe you like the Mitt Romneys, Mike Huckabees, Rick Santorums, and Rick Perrys of the world, and I wouldn't preclude them from running again, but there are a lot of new faces coming along. Your Bobby Jindal, your Scott Walker, your Marco Rubio, your Rand Paul, presumably your Ted Cruz, Christie. You know, you have all these guys. Whatever you think of those guys have not had a chance to be on a national stage and say, hey, here's why I think I would make a good president. And I want to see these guys get a solid chance to make their pitch. I have preferences among them, but I don't think if there are like 10, 12 guys on that stage, you could see the Scott Walkers of the world kind of having a tough time standing out in that. And so there's a part of me that wants to, you know, like it's not you want to prematurely narrow the field, but you want to make sure that anybody who's going to run gets a significant opportunity to pitch themselves. And just this idea, I mean, you know, Hugh Hewitt is using the term of a NASCAR 30-car pileup as a metaphor for this right now. And I just am not so sure it's really serving the party or any of the candidates all that well.
You know what the solution here is, Jim?
What?
conference tournaments before you get into the actual NCAA tournament.
Look, or divisional winners and wild cards. You know, yes. You can pick the sports metaphor. But look, we clearly have the social conservative division.
Yes.
We clearly have the establishment division. And then maybe you could say, you know, Rand Paul and Marco Rubio are in the foreign policy division, you know, and let them sort themselves out a little bit and then set it all up. So that's my, you know, we're kind of saying this tongue in cheek, but you get the feeling that, you know, there's an old saying that the media counts one too many. By having so many people in there, inevitably, there's probably going to be some good candidate who won't get the opportunity to shine that he or she deserves just because the field is so crowded.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and this came to us yesterday, and I don't think it really comes as much of a surprise, unfortunately. This is the USA Today version of the story. A senior leader of Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen claimed responsibility Wednesday for the attacks on the offices of satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo that killed 12 people in Paris last week. They said it was a direct retaliation for insulting the Prophet Muhammad. He called the killers heroes and went on to say that they blew off the dust of disgrace and lit the torch of glory in the darkness of defeat and agony. Jim, none of that ridiculous rhetoric comes as much of a surprise or the sponsorship, quite frankly. But for an administration that tried to convince us in 2012 and again in the last couple of years that Al-Qaeda was on the run and essentially irrelevant except in small pockets of dangerous parts of the world. Once again, that narrative seems to have been contradicted quite tragically and quite definitively.
I think from that statement, we can come to the conclusion that in addition to having access to extremists, having access to weapons, and in some cases access to explosives, it is now clear that Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has access to a thesaurus. And they're really going to the overwrought language there. It's not stunning news. The claim that Anwar al-Awlaki, who was last seen meeting a Tomahawk missile in 2011, they say he had a hand in the planning of it, which would mean they've been planning this for 3 years. Possible, or this could be some sort of disinformation or boasting going on there. I think what is frustrating about this, I was having this discussion with somebody the other day who basically said, look, every time there's an attack, somebody says, well, was it connected to ISIS? Was it connected to Al-Qaeda? Were they lone wolves? It doesn't really matter because they're all a bunch of crazy Islamists who want to kill us. And I completely understand that thinking. But what I do think is kind of we should be thinking about, or at least those who's in charge of protecting us should be thinking about, is that clearly there's now a rivalry between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And Al-Qaeda is kind of the established brand name in Islamist terror. And ISIS is kind of the younger, edgier, angrier, more violent. And Greg, am I crazy for saying they're kind of a millennial terror group?
Okay.
And unfortunately, it's not every suicide bomber gets a participation trophy. It's more in, I think there seems to be a purer nihilism to their. They are very theatrical. The crucifixions they were doing in Iraq. Earlier this week, the effort to hack into the YouTube and Twitter feeds of Central Command. Al-Qaeda, I say this quasi-thankfully, always was obsessed with airliners and always obsessed with that. And ISIS seems to be a little bit more, hey, we'll just create terror any way we can. The idea that this, you know, like I can understand this mentality of, look, whether it's just, you know, Jihad Joe, just some quote-unquote lone wolf who decides to kill people, or whether it's on orders from afar, doesn't matter that much. Either way, there's somebody still trying to kill us. But the idea that they're still hatching plots overseas and managing to hit the West in the West is definitely an unnerving development and kind of confirms our worst suspicions.
Unfortunately, it does. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, there's a lot of less than reputable politicians out there. But oftentimes, you know, the argument from people who keep reelecting their lawmakers say, well, a lot of those other people aren't much, but my guy's okay. The people in Henrico County, Virginia, cannot make that claim, yet nonetheless, they've reelected Joseph Morrissey to the Virginia House of Delegates. He quite handily defeated his Democratic opponent, Kevin Sullivan. He was a Democrat. He ended up resigning his seat, and we'll tell you why in a second. And the Republican, Matt Walton, 42% of the vote for Morrissey, 33% for the Democrat, 24% for the Republican. Voters were apparently unmoved, according to the Washington Post, by Morrissey's plea last month on a misdemeanor charge of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, which stemmed from his relationship with a 17-year-old receptionist at his law office. Morrissey is 57. He's now commuting to work at the House of Delegates from jail because that was part of the plea deal he made to avoid felony charges. The only good news in this story seems to be that both Republicans and Democrats are still going to try to perhaps kick him out or at least severely censure him in Richmond. But Jim, if you can't get better than that as your elected official, you might as well just surrender the seat.
I was going to say, Greg, I can summarize this guy in five words. Too sleazy for Terry McAuliffe.
Wow.
McAuliffe has said he should not be, you know, he's embarrassed his office. He should not be in the state legislature. It's possible they will make an effort to expel him from the state legislature. So it's possible. I also just point out, I wrote about this a bit in the Morning Jolt, and I got a very upset response from a reader who is in western part of the county. And he says, look, you know, those are those idiots in the eastern part of the county. I had nothing to do with it. Don't tar us with their bad judgment. So my apologies to those county residents. There are two observations. One comes from Mickey White, who I do a pop culture podcast with, and she lives in this area. I think she lives in what used to be Cantor and now Bratz district, which is near there. You realize he's probably going to be ineligible to vote for his own reelection.
Probably.
And the other great irony, if they wait long enough, his girlfriend will be.
Oh.
There you go. Those are my four observations there, Greg.
That is a very...
And I ended on a terrible one, didn't I?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know how to transition out of that, so I'm not even going to try. Jim, get your brackets ready for the 2016, and hopefully we can come up with something good to make fun of that along the way, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.